Afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Herbert Gillap, and I am appearing pro se. I'm the respondent appellant in this case. My registration number is 1005. Judge Loeb may know that this is the second appeal in this proceeding since you were on the panel in the first case. The first case involved primarily the standing of attorneys to proceed under 1410.119 on their own motion to seek attorney's fees if their client did not so proceed. And that opinion said that attorneys had no standing under 1410.119, but based on case law prior to the enactment of the Colorado Dissolution of Marriage statute, there was an equitable basis for lawyers to somehow involve themselves to get paid. What happened with respect to that opinion is when the mandate issued on October 1st, 2008, or 2007, I guess it was, that there were a series of proceedings to by the then limited conservator and the attorneys to collect some money. And that is what has sort of added another wrinkle to this case. The issue of standing was addressed in the first opinion, but what happened later was the attorneys then tried to actually enforce their obligation to get paid, and the issue had to do with whether or not they had any ability to collect any money since their client had filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy and had been discharged, and the attorney's claims had been discharged in that bankruptcy. So the argument was that there was nothing to allocate. Whether you had standing or not had nothing to do with whether you actually could proceed to collect some money under the allocation provisions in the final hearing order on attorney's fees, which was entered by Judge Manzanares on August 19th. And Judge Manzanares's order is not the model of clarity, but what he did say was there were certain contingent matters that needed to be addressed before there was a quote-unquote net number that the attorneys could assert against either the petitioner in this case, who had at that time declared bankruptcy, or against the respondent, and therefore you did not have the dollars and cents matrix to go into a final judgment. That's what ultimately caused the problem that was presented by the orders of the magistrate of the Denver District Court and the District Court judge in this case, because essentially what they did is make an assumption that there was a final order without considering what Judge Manzanares had said in his August 19th order, and that was the allocation provisions required that certain events happened. The bankruptcy, the family home be sold, that the bankruptcy trustee be involved and his claims and the resulting payments, and it should end up in some net number that the respondent was obligated for. But all of those calculations had yet to occur, and as a matter of fact, have never occurred. And what happened is that when the magistrate judge state court magistrate and the district court looked at matters, they simply assumed that what Judge Manzanares had said in fixed numbers was what was supposed to be entered as a judgment. And as a result of that exercise, the district court on July 31st, 2008, ordered that the net proceeds of the sales of the family home that were not exempt under the homestead statute be distributed, and the part that was distributed that is the subject of this appeal is the non-exempt respondent's portion of the home proceeds was just $10,259.67.
That's what's at issue in this appeal, correct?
The issue in this appeal.
So I'll ask you, and I'll ask your opponent when he gets up to argue, why isn't that doing exactly what the division in the first DLAP appeal said couldn't be done?
Because the first appeal simply said that the amount of the attorney's fees and the allocation method were affirmed. The problem, Your Honor, is that the allocation method was never conducted.
Didn't the first appeal say that the non-exempt portion went, there were two non-exempt portions.
It was divided in half.
Right, correct. It was divided in half. So why didn't what the magistrate do just say, just it was completely contrary to what the division, the first division said?
Unfortunately, I think you're missing a step there.
Okay, help me out then.
Okay, the step is that it's not a fixed number. If you read Judge Manzanares' August 19th order, and if you read his musings about what he really meant in the, it's, I think it's in volume 3 of the record, what he said was, I don't know how this is all going to work out because we're involving ourselves with a bankruptcy trustee, we're involving ourselves with home proceeds. I am changing the original property division from a split 50-50 to 100% allocated to pay attorney's fees.
But that was reversed by the first division.
Yes, it was. And the opinion in the 05-1500 case, if you read the very last word, said, we affirm the reasonableness of the attorney's fees and the allocation. Now, that's, in my view, that is the allocation method, not a final affirmation of a judgment fixed and certain with respect to a dollars and cents figure. That's the entire problem here, because the distribution of the $10,259.67, there was no lien on it. It couldn't be a subject of an attorney's lien. Judge Manzanares used the term, it's not a judicial lien, which I guess must mean it's not a judgment lien. And there was no finding, there's no evidence in the record of any calculation. The magistrate simply said, here's what I think happened based on the August 19th order. And then Judge Hyatt said, so I think that's right. And the attorneys get the $10,259.67 that belonged to the respondent.
If we construe the prior division's opinion to say that the allocation was of an amount, though, that changes that has to change your viewpoint, doesn't it?
Well, first of all, with all due respect, what is the amount?
Well, the court awarded $49,000 in fees.
That's it. That's correct. But if you read, it's all based on Judge Manzanares' order. He did not say in that order $49,000, if whatever it was, is payable by the respondent. He said that's what I find as the reasonable attorney's fees. Court of Appeals in the first opinion said that's correct. He then went through Judge Manzanares.
Judge Manzanares couldn't do that because the petitioner's bankruptcy, correct?
He couldn't do it because he didn't know. He changed the allocation in terms of the house. He didn't know what the bankruptcy trustee, point number two, was going to be able to glom onto out of those proceeds. He didn't know the interplay of the homestead exemption, whether in the bankruptcy context it was going to be split 50-50 or there was going to be something left over. There were a whole bunch of unknown mathematical blanks, so to speak, that needed to be plugged into till you got the formula to come to a final judgment.
But isn't the relevant portion of the first appeal whether I guess it was Judge Manzanares, whether he could distribute more than half of the proceeds of the home sale essentially to petitioner or her counsel, and the division in the appeal said you can't do that. The permanent orders were that they each get half, right?
The permanent orders, well, I think
this is all about the home, right? The $10,000 isn't just in the abstract. It was
the proceeds of the sale.
It was the proceeds of the sale.
The proceeds of the sale of some $65,000. there is the application of a $45,000 homestead exemption, which involved not only the people who were claiming the exemption, but whether or not, within the bankruptcy context, 100% of that went to the petitioner, half went to the petitioner, half went to the respondent. What happened to the non-exempt $20,000 left over, half under Judge Robbins' order, half of it belonged to the petitioner, half of it belonged to the respondent. Under Judge Manzanares' order, he, in a sense, said, I don't know, because all of these activities that need to be dealt with before we come up with a net number have got to occur.
Didn't the division say we do know? Each petitioner gets half of that $20,000, and the respondent gets half of it.
I'm sorry, which judge said
that? The division, in the first division in the first appeal.
The first, with all due respect, the first opinion simply said Judge Manzanares cannot change a final property settlement order. Judge Manzanares' determination of the reasonableness of the fee in amount plus the allocation, in quotes, is our affirmed. We don't address the bankruptcy issue because it's not before us, and the case was remanded. There's no specific calculation in the first appeal as to how the numbers that I just mentioned come out at the end, so that there is a final, non-appealable judgment that a sheriff could execute on. You give the order to of Judge Manzanares to a sheriff for execution, and they're going to shake their head. What do I levy on? You can't levy on something unless you have a final judgment with a number in it that the sheriff can execute on. That's a final judgment. I've got 3 minutes left. I'll reserve some of my time.
May it please the court. My name is Timothy B. Walker. I am petitioner's former counsel, appellee in this case. With the court's permission, I'll refer to the parties as I did in my answer brief as husband and wife for clarity. I'd like to address the two main issues in this case. One, what was the effect, if any, of the wife's discharge in bankruptcy on the former counsel, my ability to collect attorney's fees, which were perfected by attorney's lien. That's an important observation.
Mr. Walker, before you start, yes. We have an order from the bankruptcy court in 2010 on husband's bankruptcy.
Yes.
Saying that the effect of the discharge on his obligation is no effect at all.
Yes.
Why is that either not law of the case or res judicata or collateral estoppel, or why should we not give deference to that finding?
Well, because that deals with the husband's bankruptcy and the order was entered prior to that.
But that order specifically says that wife's bankruptcy did not affect your right to collect against husband.
That's correct, and I frankly toyed with the idea of whether I had the ability to seek a portion of the wife's non-exempt share of the proceeds of the sale of the marital home, but I forewent that, Your Honor.
I guess my point is, why is this an issue? Because we've got a prior court that's already decided that.
I don't think it is an issue. I don't think that the effect of the wife's discharge is an issue at all. That's my whole point. I had a perfected attorney's lien, which was filed, by the way, in March of 2004, far before the wife filed her bankruptcy. And under the Colorado law, clearly that survives and is superior to the bankruptcy. It survives the discharge under the Berkland case, which we've studied.
The lien attaches to proceeds that are generated as a result of your efforts. The home sale wasn't a result of your efforts.
The division of the home was a product of my efforts in the dissolution case, I believe, Your Honor.
Did you sell the house?
I did not sell the house, but the house was ordered to be listed for sale as a part of the orders under the trial court.
Did you argue that it was a result of your efforts?
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, I believe that all the results in this case were largely a part of my co-counsel's efforts. It was an extremely difficult case. And that's why we did file our notice of attorney's lien. For the record, the judgment that Judge Manzanares ordered attributed to my firm was $49,000, which was considerably less than what we asked for. And frankly, today, as of today's date, I've been able to get distributed from the trial court $10,259 and change as a part of that. That's all. I won't get any more.
Let me ask you about that. Prior to the time that the magistrate entered the order, which is the subject of this appeal, was there any order that specifically entered a $49,000 judgment against Mr. DeLapp? I understand that Judge Manzanares said, I'm awarding you $49,000. That's what you're going to get. But is there any order prior to this, the order that's the subject here, where anybody says that's a judgment against Mr. DeLapp in that amount?
I believe Judge Manzanares' order was clear on August 19th, in which he said, to the extent that the my attorney's fees can't be satisfied by the proceeds of the sale of the marital home, judgment shall enter, I believe those were his words, against the husband, Herbert DeLapp.
But there were all kinds of contingencies to what that would be. Isn't that correct?
I think that's correct. But I believe, Your Honor, that the contingencies really were contingencies that lay with the bankruptcy court. That is, what is the homestead of, exemption? What is the effect of the bankruptcy court's ruling on that? And I think that the trial court, Judge Manzanares, was simply saying, I'm entering a judgment for $49,000, a liquidated amount, against Mr. DeLapp if necessary. And if the bankruptcy court determines that both Mr. DeLapp and Mrs. DeLapp have a homestead exemption, we'll simply deduct that. That's $45,000 per statute. It's a liquidated amount. I don't believe it takes a new hearing for that, Your Honor. I think we did have. And by the way, the judgment for attorney's fees under the Hill case was a fee-shifting judgment. It wasn't a judgment for damages. So it was a final judgment. The problem that occurred in the Hill case was that the trial court never allocated fees. In this case, Judge Manzanares did allocate fees. He allocated fees to me of $49,000. If I might, I'd like to address.
It's your position, just to summarize, that you had a judgment for $49,000 that would be offset, if you will, by some sums to be determined in the future.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think it was clear the judgment would be offset by what was available from the proceeds of the sale of the home, what the exemptions were that were attributable to the husband and the wife under the homestead statute. And the balance was, the net number resulted in $10,259 non-exempt proceeds for each party. Now, Mrs. DeLapp, her $10,259 was discharged in her bankruptcy. I had no quarrel with that, but not Mr. DeLapp's. And because I had a perfected attorney's lien under the Mann case and under the Berkland case, I could go ahead and enforce that lien. That lien survived. The bankruptcy trustee filed no adverse proceeding challenging the legitimacy of my lien. My lien was reduced to judgment by Judge Manzanares. I had a perfected lien. I had a judgment on the lien. It was for a liquidated amount. I think that's all I needed to do.
Does the lien survive the bankruptcy?
That's what the Berkman case says, Your Honor.
I thought it had to be attributable to domestic support and things of that nature.
It has to be attributable to marital property over which the court has jurisdiction, under the Weidert case, which I cited in my brief. And if Judge Manzanares clearly had jurisdiction over the proceeds of the sale of the home, that was part of the division of property, but he hadn't ruled on the issue of attorney's fees, and it's clear that under Colorado law, the court must rule on attorney's fees before the judgment is final. That's what Judge Manzanares did.
But didn't Judge Manzanares also say that, effectively, that the non-exempt portion of the proceeds of the home owned by the respondent could go to pay your attorney fees? And isn't that exactly what the prior division said he couldn't do?
I don't believe it said he couldn't do. I believe it said he could do. Under the Weidert case, as I read, the judgment lien attaches to any marital property. Doesn't matter who it belongs to, if it's marital property. So the marital property was the proceeds of the sale of the marital home. I think that's clear in the Mann case and in the Wader case, both of which are cited in my brief. I'd like to briefly address the issue of waiver, because I talked a lot about res judicata and collateral estoppel and waiver, and I think it's important for this court to remember that, in essence, this second appeal amounts to, I would respectfully suggest, the husband getting two bites at the apple. He failed to raise the issue of the effect of the wife's discharge in bankruptcy all the way throughout the proceedings in the legal separation case. Never filed a plea. Now, under the rules of civil procedure, discharge in bankruptcy is an affirmative defense and it has to be pleaded. Husband didn't plead it at all, didn't even raise it. In fact, he never even apparently was aware of it until this honorable court in 05 CA 1500 mentioned it in oral argument. Well, said, well, counsel, you didn't raise the issue of the effect of the wife's discharge. So it appears that the husband took that as an invitation, once the case was remanded, to raise the issue again, having never raised it before. I think what's instructive, by the way, with regard to waiver, is that Crocker case that we cited in on page 19 of our answer brief. That case says a party waives all objections and defenses which he doesn't present in his answer or in the underlying pleadings in the trial court. And where a defense is not raised at any stage of the proceedings in the trial court, it cannot be raised on appeal. I think that's what this honorable court did in the first appeal. And I think that's exactly what this honorable court should do in this appeal, because I think Mr. DeLapp has waived his right to raise an offense. And he's trying to do it twice. I honestly believe, Your Honor, that two but one bite of the apple is enough in this case. Be glad to answer any further questions if the court has them. Thank you very much.
I think the waiver argument, I'll spend 30 seconds on that, is back to front, as the British say. The waiver is a defense that needed to be pled affirmatively somewhere along the line, post-mandate of the first appeal by petitioner's former counsel. It wasn't. There's absolutely nothing in the record that indicates that that defense was brought up by petitioner's former counsel. And I think that's, we touched that on in our reply brief.
Counsel, let me follow up on Judge Casebolt's question to Mr. Walker. There is a ruling by the bankruptcy court in May 2010 that says that your former wife's discharge does not bar Mr. Walker from continuing to pursue you for the attorney fees. Why shouldn't we just defer to that ruling?
Well, point of clarification, it's a legal separation case. Let me just say that the idea that the bankruptcy court issue and the effect on either the petitioner or respondent's bankruptcy makes that portion of this appeal possibly moot, because the adversary proceedings in the ruling by Judge Tallman, which we attached to our brief, simply say that the obligations of anyone, literally, to the former lawyers or former conservators is discharged or non-dischargeable under 11 U.S.C. 523A5.
The result is the same either way.
Either way. Let me talk just a second, if I can. I hopefully answered your question. Let me talk just for the last minute I have here on this attorney's lien issue. This is bizarre. The Colorado Attorney's Lien Statute 12.5.119 and any case law under that says that the attorney's lien attaches to property of the client, capital C. The client here is the petitioner, not the respondent. If Judge Manzanares' change of the property settlement agreement had gone through and all of the property from the house, marital residence, went to the petitioner, then maybe, just maybe, Mr. Walker's argument is correct. But that's not what happened. The proceeds were split 50-50. His lien attaches only to the petitioner's half, not to the respondent's half. I mean, that is absolutely crystal clear. There is no case authority that I'm aware of that I've ever seen that says that an attorney's lien attaches to property of a third party. It doesn't happen. That's not what the intent was. A charging lien attaches to property of a client you as a lawyer did work for. So there's no judgment lien here. There's no attorney's lien. There's no ability on a final dollars and cents judgment to allow Judge Hyatt, in his July 31 order, to disperse $10,259.67 to the petitioner's former lawyer. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, gentlemen, for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get your written opinion in due course.